This is the State of Things broadcasting from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you. Well, that's always a pleasant sound, but what if this were the first sound you heard outside your house each morning? That'll get you out of bed. That's the sound of a holler, and it is what some consider to be the earliest form of human communication. Long before text messages, cell phones, and landlines, hollering was the easiest way to share messages over long distances. Each holler communicated something different, ranging from good morning to help, I'm in danger. As technology developed, more and more people, of course, moved off farms into urban areas, and the traditional hollering began to fade away. But a group of people at Spivey's Corner, North Carolina, has been working hard for almost five decades to keep it alive. Since 1969, Spivey's Corner has been home to the National Hollerin' Contest, a day-long event that celebrates this form of communication. In its earliest years, the contest drew crowds of more than 10,000 people, and contest winners could regularly appear on the national media circuit. Today, the contest is much smaller, and some fear that it might not be around much longer. A new documentary tells the story of the competition through the lives of three contestants who competed in last year's contest. We're going to preview the documentary and meet two of the contestants today. Joining me first is five-time National Hollerin' Champion, Tony Peacock. Tony, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And Tony, you really immersed yourself in the history of hollerin'. Can you take us back a bit? What's the history of hollerin' in North Carolina?
Traditionally, farmers hollered to communicate messages and express themselves. And the contest, when it started in 1969, was partly a joke. The founder, Ermine Godwin Jr., was meeting with some friends. One of those friends worked at the radio station in Dunn, North Carolina. And he remembered how people had hollered long ago, and the echoes you would hear that would travel in the neighborhoods, and mention that people did not holler the way they used to. So after that, they decided to have a contest, and one thing that helped it get off the ground was that Charles Kuralt, the famous journalist, offered to cover it for CBS News, and that first year they estimated 5,000 people showed up for the contest.
Journalist and WUNC alum, I might
right,
add. Yeah.
Right.
And, of course, in rural areas and the mountains, too. I mean, hollering across the hollers was vital for people who lived,
exactly,
you know, so in such isolated conditions. I want to find out more about the tradition itself and the contest, but you mentioned Ermine Godwin. What a character, right? I mean, here's somebody who really wanted to bring attention to Spivey's Corner, right?
Right, and he would do anything. He offered to provide refuge to the Shah of Iran in the 70s. He wrote President Reagan. President Reagan wrote him back and said, "We have Congress. Hollering goes on here all the time. I'm very sorry I can't attend." He put in a bid for the Olympics and the Super Bowl, and NBC News did a spot. He predicted that Skylab would fall at Spivey's Corner. So there was nothing that he would not do to bring attention to Spivey's Corner. But the contest itself still focused on the old-timey hollers. The judges, which he was in charge of getting as long as he was able, were told to look for the old-timey traditional hollers that farmers used. And there was quite a bit of research that was done by the mid-70s to try to identify the trademark Sampson County holler, which is a part of what you heard in that first clip. Leonard Emanuel was legendary. I was a little boy when he won that contest, and I actually was able to hear him holler down by the river when I was a little boy. I did not know what I was hearing, but we walked through the woods down to the banks of the river. My daddy knew immediately. He said, "That's Leonard Emanuel down here hollering." And sometime later, we saw him come around the bend in a little two-man boat with one of his friends. They got out politely. He was a very quiet, meek man. But when he hollered, I actually met Mike Seeger at the festival for the Eno a few years ago, and he was telling me about how Leonard Emanuel, who was famous for what they call the Diddy, traveled with him on the West Coast. And he said everywhere we went, he would come out and do the Diddy, and we got standing ovations. Wow.
And could you tell, or could your father tell, when Leonard, when you heard that call, kind of what he was doing it for, what it meant? Was he just caught a fish? Or
he? No, my dad had always said, be quiet when you go, because you'll scare the fish away. Yeah. So it was a very odd sound to me, but it was beautiful. You could just hear the echoes rolling off the woods and the water there. And he knew a lot of old-timey folk and hymn tunes. He's featured in the Rounder Records recordings that was done in the mid-70s and was the subject of a master's thesis at Carolina by Peter Bartus. He's really was legendary, as was Miss Turner, who won in 77.
I want to hear from her in just a second, but I think we're set up to do this. So if Tony was able to give us the Sampson County Holler now, as long as we're set up to do it, because it tends to get a little loud, maybe we could hear it and you could tell us how it's characteristic and what, you know, what it is that makes it Sampson County. But can you give it to us?
I'd like to do a couple if I could. This is a little change, but I came up with my own signature sound, which was inspired, although people will say this does not sound like that, it was inspired by sounds I heard as a child, which were primitive Baptist preaching rhythms and tobacco auctioneers. And this was my signature sound, which many people will say was not the trademark sound like you heard from Mr. Emanuel, but this is my signature call.
That's Tony Peacock, 5-time national hollering champion. There's a few bricks now that are loose here at the you know, we used to do this. I was actually started in radio before Marconi. I got started, and this is how we did radio. We had no wires, no mics. The whole thing was done that way. That's amazing. When did you start making, it occur to you that you could make up your own holler, Tony?
I competed for the first time in 1998. I had family members who had been involved. I have a cousin who's won it 8 times, longer than anybody else. And I should make one correction. I'm a 6-time champion now.
All right. No, I'm not going to, because I don't want you hollering at me for getting that wrong. Joining me now is the 1977 ladies hollering champion, Iris Turner. Welcome to the State of Things, Iris.
Thank you.
Your story is a little bit different. Tell us the first time you heard about hollering.
My neighbor heard me holler because I holler to get my children home. My range is about 1.25 miles, so I can be heard pretty long, far away. And if my kids didn't hear me, one of the other kids would say, "Your ma." So that's how I started. My neighbor had gone to the contest, and he said, "Go, you'll win." I went, "Yeah, sure." So I went, and I won. But back then, it was totally different from when he won. When I won, it was a national contest. Now it's gone down to a hollering and heritage festival, something like that. It was national then, and anybody could enter. And the hollers came from all over the world. My particular holler is a Basque war cry. It's traditional in the Pyrenees Mountains. And when the first guy started, Ermine Godwin, he wanted the hollers from anywhere that was traditional. It didn't have to be just North Carolina. Yeah. It was anywhere. And that's the only reason I got to be in it and win at that time. And then when I entered, you couldn't win more than one time. I did win later a second time, but in the beginning it was one shot.
So where did you get this Basque holler? Where did it come from?
My grandmother. My grandmother hollered, but I never heard her holler. And my father was running a movie, and we lived near Fayetteville, Fort Bragg. And my dad was a projectionist, and he ran the movie Thunder in the Sun with Susan Hayward. And I heard the holler, and I went crazy for it. I was about 9, and I thought, of course, you know, every kid wants to go, oh, yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to try that. So I did, and then I just thought it was something you did. And then my father said, well, you know, your grandmother used to holler just like that. So that's where I got mine.
So you heard it in the projection booth.
Yeah.
So when you first imitated, were you going like...
No, I was upstairs. Upstairs is soundproof.
You don't hear the film. Well, can you give us an example then of this holler, the award-winning holler? Okay, here it comes. Everybody ready? Whoa. Iris Turner is the 1977 Ladies Hollering Champion and a prominent character in a new documentary about the National Hollering Championship in Spivey's Corner. So you were surprised then to hear your grandmother can do this. And she was still, did she do it for you? Was she still with you?
No, she was in her 70s at the time, and I never heard it. She couldn't hold it. I'm almost 70, and I'm still holding it. And I don't know how many more years I'll be able to hold. But see, I've been hollering constantly since I won.
Wow.
I've done 300 radio shows, about 100.5 parades. I did Eno for 7 years straight, the River Festival. I've done 13 major TV shows and I don't know how many commercials, four, I think.
Including The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
If you just joined us, we're talking to two delightful people from Ivy Corners, North Carolina. Iris Turner and Dan McGlam. And yeah, we should explain that the hollering originally started years ago, if I remember from the other people who were here, as a method of communication. I mean, they didn't have the phones and they would simply go out and holler to their neighbors if they wanted somebody to come over or to come out of the fields or whatever. Isn't that about it?
Right. Or if you needed help, like if you ran your tractor over yourself.
Yeah.
it was used for communication, and everybody in the family would do it, and they all had a little different ending.
Okay, you all say.
And this is my
name. Yes, you can stand or be comfortable, however you want.
Well, what do you want?
Whatever's best for you.
I'm all yours.
Okay.
So we don't have to hear that on the Carson Show. What was it like to be on? I mean, you know, can you imagine being on the Tonight Show back then for hollering? What was it like for you?
I thought it was a joke. They called and said, "This is the Carson people, and we want you to come." I said, "Well, thank you very much." And they said, "No, we're serious." I went, "Okay, fine," because I thought it was, you know, somebody playing a joke on me. And then they called back and they said, "No, we have airplane tickets. You can call Piedmont Airlines." And how far back I go. So the Piedmont Airlines called me and said, "Yes, we have a first class ticket for you to fly out to Hollywood." And I went, "Thank you very much, but I don't want to go alone." So they called me again and called me again. I said, "Well, I'm going to." But Piedmont was nice. They turned the ticket in for 2 coach tickets. And we went, and it was very exciting. I was more excited about the Gong Show because I appeared on that later. I didn't know because it was a TV show that I just adored. You know, it was just funny. And
how'd you do on the Gong Show? Did you make it, or did they gong you?
No, I was one of the judges.
Oh,
I was on for with Peter Lawford and J.P. Morgan for over a week. Yeah, I really loved it. They
actually
had like
the gong broke, and they used you to.
Yeah,
to
that's
get,
right.
Yeah.
They had like two at this time. Now you got to realize I'm a dinosaur. I had a $250,000 diamond necklace and 2 guards behind me because they decked me up for the show. And in case you heard on the Carson Show, I had a really thick Southern accent. I was with my friend, and he's deceased now. He was the male holler that year. And he had a really natural, thick, heavy Southern accent. And when we were talking to the producers or whoever was in charge that day, she said, "Oh, my God, Johnny Carson's going to love your Southern accent." I went, "Oh, good."
You faked the accent.
I faked the accent through the whole dang thing. I just did. And I figure I'm going to be as hick as they want me to be hick. Hick was popular.
Well, that's a great story. I'm joined now by one of the filmmakers of this new film that documents the National Hollering Contest. Liv Dubendorf is getting her MFA at Wake Forest University, and she joins me now. Hello, Liv.
Hi.
Well, so tell me about this film and what got you all started making it.
Sure. So I actually think the first clip was from the documentary that inspired ours. It's called Welcome to Spivey's Corner by Keir Klein, released in 78. And I was watching it with my co-director, Brian Gersten. And we were reading the YouTube comments on the video, and we saw there was a comment by a man named Robbie Goodman. And he said, "Oh, that's me. I was the junior champion that year." So we reached out to him via YouTube, and And he put us in contact with the people from Spivey's Corner, and that kind of spiraled into the documentary.
Now, by the time you got to, there were 10,000 people there at one point. By the time you made the documentary, about how many people are coming to see the contest?
Right. So last year we actually got rained out, but I mean, I would say it was still around, what do you think, 300, 200, if between that. It's certainly, the attendance has gone down. It's off the main highway now. It used to be, Spivey's Corner used to be right on the way to the beach. And now with the interstate, people are, you know, going around. So there's not that natural influx of people. But there's still like a core group of people who really enjoy hollering.
The Shah of Iran has passed away, so yes. That site
is
longer an attraction. Tony, do you worry about the future of hollering?
Certainly, and I have to say, I have to thank the people who organize it now. I think Mr. Godwin might have stopped after the 25th anniversary, which was the second time that Iris won when she came back in 93. She was the first lady to ever win twice, and if they had not decided to go on with it, of course, I would have never had a chance. But we do see our numbers dwindling, and we need new blood with people who are interested in learning old-timey hollers.
Iris?
When he was in charge, he got Coca-Cola to put it on the trucks. It was on all the big trucks. We had major sponsors. We had R.J. Reynolds. We had Coca-Cola. We had so many people. There's never less than 15 or 20 television stations there. We had so much backing. Plus, we had, like, Little Jimmy Dickens, which, you know, nobody young now knows who that is, but Little Jimmy Dickens, we had people that were important. We had the agricultural state representative there. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people, and I think that brought more people, and plus, like I said, he would do anything to get the contest out in the front. I was one of the ones that did for the, he was mentioning it, the television show. I was a 300-pound cheerleader for the, what, you just said it a few minutes ago, the
but anyway, you were getting to, you were
Super the Super Bowl. Yeah, I was right. A 300-pound cheerleader for Spivey's Corner. Anything, I tried everything my whole life. Now, I'm still performing. I've been performing almost 40 years now. And I've done commercials and all kinds of sponsorships for children's diseases like cerebral palsy. And.
Right. Yeah. But, Tony, are people still making the hollers? I mean, apart from the contest, is anybody doing it anymore? Sort of naturally and as part of their lives.
Well, when I won in 99, I was the first new winner since they opened it up after the 25th anniversary. And we had one other person, Kevin Jasper, who came back, and he has won it four times now. But it's been about four or five of us who have been rotating. Mm-hmm. And I think we try to hold the contest together the best we can. We have a lot of people who will come back for 1 year, right, and or participate, but then they've had their thrill and they move on. So we hope we'll get some continued interest.
Any sense in your doing this research that hollering is alive and well apart from the contest? Are people still doing it on their farms and in their mountain homes?
I think right now it seems to me more of a nod to history. So it's just kind of keeping that tradition alive and remembering where we came from.
Talking to filmmaker Liv Dubendorf and also the 1977 Ladies Hollerin' Champion Iris Turner and six-time Hollerin' Champ National Champion Tony Peacock, thank you for being on the show today on the State of Things.
Thank you.
Liv and her co-producer are putting the finishing touches on their film, The Hollerin' Contest at Spivey's Corner, going to be screened locally this fall. You can check out our website regularly, stateofthings.org, to find out more. Just ahead, we're going to hear about the golden age of pro wrestling here in Greensboro, but once again, the music of Ann Claire and the Wild Mystics.
Hide the key to the attic, and no one will know you're gone if you stay till the morning and drink this blood at dawn. If you bring a blue feather and your lover's femur bone, I will show you the vision you've been counting on. Behind you, I can smell it on your breath. It's a strange kind of voodoo I'm not familiar with, but you're close to the answer.